And now joining us on the phone from right here on the East Coast in Westchester, New York, I have yoga instructor Steve Kane to talk about happiness and yoga and how to find your life purpose at any age. And again, if you have questions or comments, please feel free to give a call, 855-345-4720, or email your questions to me, Dr. Mara, at drmarakartel.com, or tweet your questions to me at M-A-R-A-E-K. So welcome, Steve. Are you there?
Yeah. Hi, Mara. Thanks for having me on the program.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us. And just a reminder, there's a slight delay when we talk to each other like this.
Okay.
So Steve, tell our listeners, we had a chance to talk, you know, and meet in person and get to know each other a little bit, and I appreciate that. And I'd really like our listeners to hear a little bit about your background.
All right, you got it. Well, for starters, I'm a 200-hour certified yoga instructor. I've been teaching for about 4 years and practicing for about 14. And I teach at a yoga studio called Yoga Shivaya in Tarrytown, New York. I also have a creative background. I originally studied illustration and then painting, and I kind of got lucky. I got into 3D animation at the infancy of that industry, and I've been running an independent creative agency that does, these days we do a lot of medical education and web technology. So I've kind of rode the technology wave and used my creative skills, and I've been fortunate to be able to do some really interesting work and also do good in the world at the same time. I'm proud of all of that. And I'm also a father of two wonderful kids. I have a 17-year-old daughter and a 20-year-old son. So with all that going on, I need all the inner peace I can get.
Right. So I, you know, we mentioned that you're doing a workshop on the art of happiness, and you talk a lot about how yoga can help us find happiness. So can you talk a little bit about this workshop and what yoga has to do with happiness?
Yeah, I realized that, you know, I used to do karate. I used to play tennis. I currently play golf. There's other ways of getting exercise. And I realized that all the time that I was practicing yoga, the thing I was really coming back for wasn't really the exercise. It was really that feeling of inner peace. You know, there's a real feeling of bliss at the end of a yoga class. So when it came time for me to teach, I increasingly became interested in, you know, that being kind of a theme in the class. But, you know, a lot of yoga class is taken up by what's called the asana practice, the physical practice. So at a certain point, I created this workshop that kind of takes a deeper dive into, you know, how do you specifically use these practices of movement and mindfulness and meditation in order to cultivate happiness in the here and now. And so I have this Art of Happiness workshop.
Okay. All right. So, you know, most people think of yoga as that kind of exercise. I mean, it's become a really trendy thing to get exercise by doing yoga. And, you know, most people think of it as just a set of movements or poses, but sounds like you're saying that that's not all there is to yoga. And
well,
you know,
yeah, there's
and I
a lot. Yeah, there's a lot more to yoga. Look, the asana practice is really important, but the primary purpose of it, if you're looking at it from, you know, the standpoint of, you know, how yoga was created, was to kind of work the kinks out of the body so that you could quiet your mind and you could sit in meditation. So it's really a warm-up to learning how to quiet your mind. You know, it's not a practice in and of itself. And, you know, aside from that, there are entire branches of yoga that don't involve physical practice at all. You know, so, you know, there are aspects of yoga that are all about, you know, devotion or gratitude, you know, that don't necessarily involve a physical practice. One of the best things anyone ever said to me about yoga is it's actually one of the few things in life where less is more. It's actually good to be a C student in yoga. Because
okay.
you're trying to find that mind, body, breath equilibrium. And if you're working too hard, you're going to get a great workout. But for most of us, it's hard to maintain that. You know, there are people that can do that. But I'd say for the average person, dial it back a little bit and see. You're trying to find that comfortable point of balancing your movement, your breath, and your body.
So what about people who can't even do those yoga poses, like downward dog, or you know, the ones that we know of, and you know, because they're older and they just can't.
Yeah,
there's yoga
for everybody. I mean, you can do. You know, I actually have a restorative practice that I teach that barely requires any movement at all. You can have chair yoga practices. There's all kinds of ways of getting around that. And again, if you're looking at the goal to be present at this moment in time, then you don't really need to move that much. You know, the amount of movement is really a personal choice.
Mhm. Mhm. So the actual poses aren't really what yoga is about. There's something underlying it, a deeper.
Well, yeah. I think there are means towards an end, right? There's an argument for having perfect alignment in a given pose because your energy channels are gonna be more open, you know. But I would say that. That's a philosophy, and the kind of the meta philosophy is really one of connecting your body to your breath and quieting your mind and being present, which doesn't necessarily require that much. So getting on to the happiness point, I've seen research that after basic needs for food and shelter are met, additional money doesn't necessarily add happiness. And in some areas of the U.S., this is supposed to be as low as $35,000 a year. And so, you know, it really got me thinking, you know, this is obviously contrary to what our culture teaches us. So
right. Everybody feels like they'll be happy as soon as they're able to afford that big house or the big car.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, nothing wrong with those things necessarily, but not necessarily the source of lasting happiness. I mean, a big house and a big car cost a lot of money to maintain, and maybe you're going to be working that much harder to maintain all of that. So, you know, as I explored this, I started to realize that for most of us, happiness is a choice. You know, we all have life challenges, but once your basic needs for, food and shelter are met, your happiness has a lot more to do with the way you react to life. You know, it's your thinking about life stimulus is going to have more impact on your happiness than a lot of things that we believe are what are cultivating our well-being. Viktor Frankl had the insight that freedom is the space between a stimulus and your response. And so from a yoga standpoint, we sometimes look at it as the length of a breath. You know, so if you can take one long, slow breath before you react to something, it really changes the nature of that reaction.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
So, I've also read, I actually don't have the name of the book at the top of my head, but there was a book that was talking about your lizard brain response, which is very quick to reacting because it's really about a fight or flight response, and your mammalian brain response, which is slower and more empathetic. And so just by, again, slowing down your response to life stimulus, it actually changes, you know, chemically the way you react to what's going on.
So, like, if you're on the highway and somebody cuts you off, rather than responding immediately, which might not be the best response.
Exactly.
Taking a few breaths to actually think about how you're going to respond.
Is that what you're
talking about?
Yeah, exactly. So if someone cuts you off on the highway, and I mean, this used to be one of my things, and, you know, it took some reflection, but the first reaction is just to take a long, slow breath. So So, you know, you're safe, nothing bad happened. There, you know, there was a momentary threat. You know, maybe you feel like the guy's being a jerk. But then when you slow down the reaction so that, you know, don't let your blood boil over that, you know, the next thing you can do is you can start to take a deeper reflection on the situation. And one of the ways that I was able to kind of make that less of an issue for myself is I thought, you know, that person made my life unsafe for a moment, but they're going through their entire day like that.
Mm-hmm.
So by shifting to that kind of mammalian compassion, you know, I was no longer dealing with it like, you know, the fight or flight response of the lizard. I was more, you know, I was feeling like, okay, you know, I had a momentary, you know, possible fender bender with this person, but, you know, they're, you know, driving around like that the whole day. So, you know, bless them and see them safely on their way.
Right, right. So it's kind of like a way of not taking it personally also, once you know that you're safe. It wasn't
exactly.
About, it wasn't about me that he was cutting off. He's cutting everybody off.
Right, you're not exactly. You're not taking it personally. Right. It's not about you. I mean, that's part of it. And then just shifting your focus to a wider view, I think, helps. But the fact is, you know, we're in an overstimulated world, and these things are happening all the time. And if you're not aware of them, you know, your blood pressure is going up, and the effects are cumulative. So, you know, you by the end of the day, you've kind of worked up a good head of stress without even being aware of it necessarily. And there was actually, on a similar topic, there was an article in the New York Times recently about how complaining rewires your brain for unhappiness. So basically what happens is your brain builds a more efficient channel to, you know, I'm sorry, more efficient network to channel the unhappy feeling. So, for instance, if we're going to continue with this getting caught up on the highway thing, so, you know, if you allow that to bother you, and then every time it happens, it bothers you a little bit more, your brain's like, okay, well, this is something that bothers me. Let's you know, throw some synapses at this problem and just make this a more efficient channel. Right. So now you're
right.
Now you've created like a thing, you know, where this is
so
your
you've
thing.
Like hardwired
right?
Your brain.
Exactly.
To feel threatened and angry.
Right. Every time that something cuts you off. Right.
Right.
And so now you just, you know, you can change your mood. I mean, I used to change my mood sometimes for the rest of the day or, you know, for a couple of hours even when one of these events happened. So, you know, there's a, I'll paraphrase a Cherokee parable, which tells of two wolves inside of you, one good, one evil, and they're battling for your soul. And so the question is, which wolf wins? And the answer is the wolf that you feed.
Right. So the more negative thoughts that you continue to have, the more you're feeding that wolf.
Exactly. So that's where the choice comes in. So that, you know, as you become more present, then you can start to look at these instances. And when something really bothers you, you can say, well, okay, can I think about this a different way? Can I broaden my view? Am I even really thinking about this the right way? Or does this have something to do with something that happened to me in the past where this seems like it's a similar situation, but it's not exactly similar? And you can start to untie those Gordian knots of knee-jerk reaction to life stimulus.
So Steve, you know, there's been research that shows that these types of events, like over the course of the day, those daily hassles, getting cut off and getting upset, or, you know, just stubbing your toe and letting it get you upset, or taking things personally throughout the day, that at the end of the day, this is more stressful even than a major life event. It's an accumulation of stresses.
Well, yeah, so that's one of the other awarenesses of this whole thing. So it's basically what's happening is it's your parasympathetic nervous system. So it's your body's fight or flight response. And your body literally responds in a chemical reaction, you know, throwing in testosterone or whatever it believes is needed in these situations when it feels threatened because it's that thinks you're going to have to either fight or flee. And these chemicals build up in your body, and they take often 24 hours to release. So you really build up a head of stress.
Mm-hmm.
And the parasympathetic nervous system is the thing that I believe yoga can help cultivate is the opposite response. It's this sense of you know, I'm safe, I'm calm, I'm relaxed, I'm present. And that helps flush those negative chemicals out, and it helps build this sense of, you know, just being content in this moment, just the way it is.
So how does yoga do that? How do these movements of yoga, or, you know, the philosophy of yoga, help us to decrease that stress and reach that state of relaxation?
Well, part of it is just mechanical. As you move your body, you know, you're twisting your muscles and your organs, and you're working the kinks out, and you're opening up blood flow, and you're, you know, you're actually, you know, beneficial chemicals are spilling out of your organs into the system. So you're just, you know, you're just kind of, you know, wringing the system out like you would, you know, a sponge to rid of it, of you know, toxicity. But then the mental part of it is, you know, it's a little bit more subtle. It's really about learning to be present in the here and now. You know, the mind's job is to constantly be on the alert. So it's looking into the past for information that might be relevant to this present moment, or rehashing something that it feels like it needs to be rehashed again, or looking into the future to, you know, anticipate certain situations. The mind is very rarely in the here and now unless you tether it to something. And the thing that you can do is you can tether it to your breath, and you can tether it to the sensations of your body. And the practice is called pratyahara, withdrawal of the senses. And by, you know, taking your mind's energy from the outside world and pulling it into the inside world, that's where you start to cultivate the sense of inner peace.
So what about those people who say, you know, the naysayers, who say, well, I can't get my mind to stop going. No matter what I do, I can try to meditate and it keeps going. And if I do yoga, I know I'm going to keep thinking about stuff.
Well, you can't stop your mind, right? So that's the very first lesson of meditation. And the very first time I tried to do an hour-long meditation, I was up at a yoga retreat. And I had done, I don't know, maybe 5, 10, 15 minutes before, but I never tried to do a full hour. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to have to meditate for a full hour. So what I got to do is I got to just ratchet the faucet of my mind as closed as possible. So I just tried to will myself to shut off all thoughts. And within seconds, you know, it starts to leak, you know, and you feel the pressure building up. And then it's just a rush of thoughts come out. And I actually, you know, I basically gave up. I mean, it was, you know, frustrating moment. But then I went and I talked to another yogi and explained to what happened. And they said, oh, yeah, no, that's not the way you do it at all. You know, you can't just shut your mind off. But what you can learn to do is you can start to disassociate yourself from your thoughts. So, you know, again, by tethering your mind, your thoughts to your what your body feels like, or what your breath feels like, or anything else, frankly, you can look at a candle. You know, there's a bunch of different ways of doing it. Then when thoughts come in, what you can do is you look at them kind of from a distance, and you try not to engage. So you allow them to happen. They're going to happen. But it's a practice of disengaging, and over time, the reason why they call it a practice is you can't, you know, I don't know, I guess people master it, but it's something that you, every time you sit on your cushion and you try to meditate, there's the challenge that, you know, your thoughts are going to start drifting in again, and you're going to have to, you know, be patient with the process and rope yourself back.
Right. So you're kind of just watching your thoughts, not really judging them.
Right. And what that does is it starts to build a sense of what's called the witness consciousness. It's the awareness beyond your thoughts. So what you start to see is your, you know, the sensations of your body are in one category, the sensations of your breath are over here, and then your thoughts and your emotions are over there. And then behind all of it, there's the thing that's aware of everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically this, you know, safe place. And ultimately what that does is it provides shelter within the storm rather than having to run for shelter from the storm. You know, you can start to, you know, have big life events happen and you can feel safe and secure just witnessing your thoughts. I mean, your thoughts are really spinning, but you realize mm-hmm. that it's just spinning thoughts. They no longer own you in the way that they do when you haven't developed that practice.
Mm-hmm. So how does that lead to happiness or finding our purpose?
Well, I mean, one of the first lessons of that is as you listen to your thoughts, you realize that if you talk to your friends the way you talk to yourself, they wouldn't be your friends
mm-hmm.
because a lot of your thoughts can be quite negative. You know, I busted a taillight pulling my car out of a parking space after teaching yoga, ironically. And, you know, my first thought was, you idiot, right?
Uh-huh.
so I'm like, well, I'm not really an idiot, you know. It was really just a momentary lapse of awareness of where the obstacle was. And why am I talking to myself like that?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so you can start to, and, you know, I actually play golf, and I see that happen in the golf course a lot. So, you know, the way some golfers talk to themselves is, you know, completely wacko, the words that come out of their mouths, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know, if golf can be frustrating, I get it. But, you know, be kind to yourself, right? And then the next step after that is you, like I said earlier, you can start to undo the Gordian knot. So as you, you know, have negative thoughts or anxious thoughts or depressed thoughts, you can start to trace them back to their root. You know, I think that that's where a lot of the real work is done. I'll have sometimes I'm thinking about something that I'm working on, and I'll remember something that had gone badly many years ago in my business. And I'm, you know, my first reaction is frustration. It's like, why am I thinking about that again?
Mm-hmm.
And then I realize, well, you know what? I'm trying to. There's something about this new situation that's similar to that. So, you know, my mind is trying to remind me that there was a valuable nugget of knowledge that was associated with this event that I should be applying to this situation, or, you know, things that happened in your childhood or in your marriage or whatever. So it, you can start to clear the channel so that if you are having, you know, streams of anxious or negative thoughts, now they're above the waterline, you can see them. And then in seeing them,
mm-hmm.
you can start to analyze them and say, okay, you know, this is no longer serving me anymore. I don't need to, you know, I don't need to call myself an idiot every time, you know, I spill a glass of milk or whatever.
Right, right. Yeah, I guess it's really, you know, and I talk a lot about how changing your thoughts affect, you know, can help you feel better, can change how you feel. And I guess you really can't change your thoughts unless you witness them.
So that's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, and then the author, Haruki Murakami, says that pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. Suffering is the story that we tell ourselves about our pain. And we can lessen our suffering by loosening our grip on the story. So,
right.
you know, this is in yoga, it's called discriminating discernment. This process of looking at your thoughts and which thoughts are serving me. And actually, challenging people and challenging events can be our best teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're challenging for a reason. There's something in our consciousness or in our psyche that is being threatened by that thing. So it really gives you a useful source of reflection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, Steve, you know, time runs away from us, and there's so much to talk about. I'd love to have you come back on another time maybe to continue this discussion because I think it's really important. But before we run out of time, maybe you can talk about where people can find out more about you and your yoga classes and your Art of Happiness program and anything else that you're doing.
Sure. So, like I said, I teach at Yoga Shavaya, which is in Tarrytown, yogashavaya.com. My Art of Happiness workshop is, you know, something that I schedule with groups. I've done it at Yoga Shavaya, but I don't currently have it on the schedule. But if there's demand, I can either do it there or elsewhere. You know, if people down in Austin want to want me to come down, I could probably mm-hmm. pull that off. And then do I just say my email, or are they going to reach out to you in terms of email? Or
You can say your email, and then later tonight I'm going to repost it on my web post about this show if people didn't get their pen and paper. But if anybody is ready to write it down right now.
All right, so it's real simple. Yeah. It's Kane Steve, KaneSteve, at me.com. And, you know, obviously I'm passionate about this subject, so if there's anything I can do to help clarify anything that we spoke about, or anybody has any questions about yoga or mindfulness or meditation or any of it, I'm more than happy to try to help.
Great. So again, you know, if anybody didn't get to their pen and paper on time, they can just check out my website, the web post about this show later tonight or early tomorrow morning, and it'll be there, and they can just click on the link for Yoga Shavaya and also find your email address.
So can I say one last thing about just
sure.
kind of a summary? Yeah, so
sure,
the prescription basically is move your body, work the kinks out. You learn how to quiet your mind by turning your attention inwards. And then in quieting your mind, you realize that you are not your mind, and you get in touch with that deeper, more authentic sense of self. And ultimately, I mean, this is long-term, it really leads you towards Dharma, because you start to, again, feel safe and comfortable in this moment in time, less you react less neurotically to things. And, you know, for me, it's an incredibly powerful practice. It's changed my
mm-hmm.
life, and I'm happy to try to help other people try it out for themselves.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on this evening's show, and good luck with this workshop. It sounds like it's something you really are passionate about, and I hope that people will contact you and invite you to do the workshop in their area.
Well, thanks, Mara. Thanks for having me on, and thanks, everybody,
yeah.
for listening. It was a pleasure.